This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. How to Be Black is the new title of a new book from Baratunde Thurston. It's part memoir and part satire, exploring some of the big questions from post-racial America, such as, when did you first realize you were black? How to speak for all black people, and how to be the next black president.
Thurston is a Harvard-educated comedian and satirist who lives in Brooklyn. He's director of digital for the satirical newspaper The Onion and co-founder of the Jack and Jill politics blog. And as his website tells you, he has more than 30 years of being black.
Wait a minute! You mean to tell me you worked for The Onion, you went to Harvard? You're like the whitest black guy I've ever met. When she said that, I wanted to slowly strangle her to death. As she exhaled her final breath, whisper forcefully into her ear, and I'm the last black guy you'll ever meet.
Baratunde Thurston will be appearing tonight at Improv Boston. And he says, by the way, if you don't buy his book, you're a racist. So I've got my copy right here. And Baratunde Thurston joins us right now. Welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Thank you for having me, Anthony. It's great to be here. And congrats on not being a racist.
Well, thank you.
And just for people to understand, I'm not saying that as a sort of editorial marketing speak. It's science.
I'm
reflecting years of scientific quantum physics, sociology, anthropology, as well as moon lighting.
I find it interesting that I have one of the white copies, and I don't think I got that on purpose, though. But there are white copies and black copies.
Yeah, it's a 50-50 split. Some are white on black, some are black on white, and the version you get depends on what you need most. It's science. I want to stress that. We have advanced racial profiling technology, which automatically delivers the book.
We need some of that advanced racial profiling technology out there, because what's out there sure ain't very advanced. But let me ask you about the book, How to Be Black. It's part memoir, as we said, part satirical guide about being black. And one of the big themes is this straddling of two different worlds.
Yeah.
And I think one of the ways into that is for you to tell me a little bit about your name. Baratunde, it's a great name, by the way. And you say that your name has served as a perfect window through which to examine your experience of blackness.
Yeah.
So tell us, first of all, why you're named Baratunde.
So I'm named Baratunde, the same reason most people are named what they are, because my parents gave it to me and sort of dubbed me that through that process. But it was in part a political and cultural act.
Yeah.
You know, my mother was very active in the civil rights and black power movements of the 60s and 70s. And a lot of that was about sort of respecting and in some ways going back to Africa.
Right. Well,
not everybody could afford the airfare. And so it was cheaper to bring Africa to you by naming your kid with an African name.
Right.
And so that's how I ended up with this Nigerian name, even though we're not Nigerian. And I think for black people, it has not necessarily stood out that much, because black people have very creative names.
Sure.
But for non-black people, it's like, ooh, where is it from? What does it mean? How many generations? When was the last time you were in Nigeria?
Well, see, that's the thing, because it seems like black people, white people, and I guess Nigerian people, native African people would all respond differently to you, right?
Yeah, well, Nigerians have a very particular response, because my version of the name, the common name is Babatunde.
Yeah.
Baratunde is essentially an unauthorized derivation. It's sort of like a Chinese knockoff version of the name. And so they recognize the Tunde part, but the Bara part strikes them as wrong. So then they want to correct me on what my name is.
Yeah.
And they say, no, your name is actually Babatunde. I'm like, no, it's
Baratunde.
It's Baratunde. I got a birth certificate. I keep it velcroed to my body at all times, just in case I want to be president.
I see. That's a good thing to have. And white people, on the other hand, they hear your name and they're...
Which is very interesting.
Very earnest.
They're just a big story.
Where are you from?
And they say, how far back does it go? And where are your people from before that? And it always just ends in slavery. Like, I just don't know. It's just like the answer is slavery. That's what it is.
So your childhood, you describe your mother as a pro-black Pan-African tofu-eating hippie who had you memorizing the countries of Africa and reading about apartheid before your 10th birthday.
True.
So she obviously gave you a consciousness about what it means to be black and to have black heritage. But then the same mother sends you to Sidwell Friends in Washington, D.C., which is where Chelsea Clinton went. The Obama girls go there. Very prestigious private school.
Yeah, the daughters of presidents, apparently.
The daughters of presidents. Yeah. So you had to straddle these sort of two worlds.
And then the third element was the neighborhood I grew up in. I grew up in Columbia Heights in Washington, D.C. during the 80s. And that was a kind of a third leg of a weird foundational stool for my upbringing, in that it was the crack wars. And it was, we had a crackhead mayor, we had crackheads as block cap, like, crack was everywhere, it was just all cracked out. Yeah. And so when that is your, when the view inside of your house is of like, this is apartheid, and you're 8 years old, and you look out the window and you see drug deals going on, you go to school and you're like with the daughters of presidents,
yeah,
that is quite an eclectic mix.
Yes.
And so it gives me, you know, it's essentially a more balanced view often, or a more insane view.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. Balanced or insane, did you find yourself being different people depending where you were on in different parts of the day?
There was one of the more fun conflicts is when, you know, most people have to in some ways perform in the worlds that they're in. Yeah. When you're at work, you're going to act way more professional than, maybe you don't actually tuck your shirt in your normal life, but mm-hmm. at work you do. Maybe you spill coffee all the time, but at work it's looked down upon. So in terms of growing up, I had this sort of Afrocentric element to my upbringing, and then going to Sidwell, and I ended up having a crossing of the lines when I wrote a paper in eighth grade called The U.S. Propaganda Machine.
Mm.
And it was this rant against basically white people and America's particular, you know, appetite for making black people feel badly about themselves through mm-hmm. negative media imagery and police brutality. And I wrote it like I was speaking to all of black America, and I handed it in. And my teacher, who was black, came to me the next day and he says, "You wouldn't have written this if I weren't black, would you?" I was like, "Hell no." You think I'm crazy? And by the way, keep it a secret. They can't know the date, man. December 13th, by the way. So, yeah.
You mentioned about growing up in this difficult part of Washington at a difficult time. And here's the coincidence that I almost mentioned to you out in the hall before we came in here. I lived in the same neighborhood,
yeah,
more or less in the same years you mentioned. When I first moved to Washington to work for NPR in 1982, I moved into a house that was dirt cheap. Who would have thought?
Yeah.
$400 a month. It was on Chapin Street, which is just down from Newton Street, yeah, where you lived on, right across from Meridian Park.
Yeah.
It was in the middle of the crack wars. We didn't know the crack wars were going on. We just knew that there were gunshots outside our window every night,
yeah,
and people
fireworks
were being hauled off in ambulances.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't mean to make light of it. It was mm-hmm. a tough, tough time. And you even write about your dad dying in a drug deal gone bad in,
yeah,
those times.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I want to read this. You say that your version, where was it? Oh, yeah, here we go. You compared growing up to the Wire,
right,
the HBO
right
series. And you write, "When the HBO series The Wire came out, I recognized so much on my TV screen from my own neighborhood. We had everything The Wire had except universal critical acclaim and the undying love of white people."
Yeah.
It's a great line.
Yeah, no, white people love The Wire, though not necessarily actual Wire-like neighborhoods.
Yes.
Yeah.
But how was it, seriously, growing up in that neighborhood?
So one of the beauties of childhood is that whatever you grow up with is normal.
Hmm, interesting.
And in some ways, that's a tragedy, too, because, yeah, you know, later in life, you look back and, like, that was insanity. So I remember seeing a little boy, maybe 12 years old, driving a Jeep Wrangler to go pick up drugs, presumably for his father or mother. And he had phone books kind of underneath so he could sit up a little higher in the car. And that just looked silly to me at the time and kind of funny. And then only later did I realize, like, that is a horrible, yeah, sort of horrible extreme behavior. So mostly I didn't realize how extremely unhealthy the environment was because it was just the environment.
But
Every once in a while.
Were you even allowed to go out? I mean, because some of those days it was really dangerous,
yeah,
to be on the streets and not part of town.
That's where my mother came in. One, she did a magical job of just keeping me occupied.
Yeah.
And I had a ton of extracurriculars. I did the D.C. Youth Orchestra program. I did this Rites of Passage program that was very Afrocentric called Anko Bia. I did Higher Achievement program, which is like an academic boosterism kind of, the school after school to prepare you for college, et cetera. So I was almost a little too busy to get in trouble. Like, I didn't have time to do the crime. And then there were these moments where it's like, oh, stay really close or just sit on the front porch or don't go outside after this hour. And you start to feel a little bit of what that restriction is. And then ultimately the big decision was when we moved. We ended up leaving that neighborhood in 1989. and moved out to Tacoma Park.
Tacoma Park, much different world up there.
Yeah, we had a yard with grass on it as opposed to bricks and broken glass.
And you end up, Baratunde, going to Harvard. I mean, talk about a world away from Newton Street in that part of Columbia.
No, it's exactly the same. I don't know what you're talking about, Anthony. Exactly the same. I resemble that question.
We have maybe a minute left, but I want to ask you about this, about this idea of straddling two worlds. You write very amusingly about this concept of understanding what the word Oreo means when you hear that the first time, this idea of a black man who's comfortable in a white world and therefore not an authentic black person. What happened the first, I mean, do you remember the first time you heard that concept?
Yeah.
How did it resonate with you?
I had arrived at Sidwell and it was seventh grade, so I guess I was 12 or 13 years old, kind of that bridge. And I was paired up with an older buddy who had been at the school his whole life. And so he was showing me, he was a black kid, showing me the lay of the land. And one of the things he showed me, in addition to where the gym is and what food to avoid, he pointed across the room at this black kid and said, "That's an Oreo." And I was like, "That." My first thought was like, "Oreos are cookies. I don't understand. Is this like a weird cultural joke inside Sidwell thing?" And what he meant was that was a black person on the outside and white on the inside. And what I thought was, no, that kid is like socializing with white people. He's going to make a great presidential candidate someday because he's got the fundraising backing that he needs. You know, why? We should respect that. Break out of your worlds, people. Break out of your worlds.
Baratunde Thurston, I wish we had more time. The book is How to Be Black. Yeah. He'll be performing tonight at Improv Boston. Thank you so much for coming in. 7:30.
Thank you, Radio Boston. And thank you, Boston. It's a beautiful day today.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.